products at the best prices, they cater to everyone from novices to cloud enthusiasts. Mention this ad.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Allison Keyes. We're learning more now about the man who killed 18 people in a mass shooting in Maine this week. Police found him dead last night and are releasing new information about Robert Card. Maine's Public Safety Commissioner Michael Soschuk says a note was found.
It's a note to a loved one and is saying that this is the passcode for my phone. This is the bank account numbers. And I wouldn't describe it as a explicit suicide note, but the tone and tenor was that the individual was not going to be around and wanted to make sure that this loved one had access to his phone and whatever was in his phone.
The head of the United Nations is criticizing Israel's bombing of Gaza, demanding an immediate ceasefire as Israel ramps up its air and ground attacks. Hamas attacked Israel October 7th. CBS's Rami Innocencio with the latest.
Israel is starting its payback, said an advisor to the prime minister, for the October 7th massacre by Hamas. More than 200 hostages taken that day are still being held, many believed to have been spirited underground. Amir Ulo is an Israel Defense Force reserve colonel.
I'm not telling you that it's going to be easy. And I'm not telling you that we are not going to face losses. We will, but when it's time to war, we know how to fight. And we will do it and we will prevail.
President Biden has more competition for the Democratic 2024 nomination. CBS's Robert Costa.
Minnesota Congressman Dean Phillips is off to the races and hitting the campaign trail, officially launching his long shot bid for the White House in New Hampshire ahead of the state's primary. The congressman has a daunting path ahead as he tries to ramp up a campaign, establish a national profile, all while confronting the skepticism of many veteran Democrats.
Some in the nation are watching the skies today. Kelly Cass is at the Weather Channel.
The heavy rain in the south, this is where we could see additional flash flood warnings, especially in the Dallas area where we've already seen anywhere from 6 to 9 inches of rain, another 2 to 3 inches on the way.
World Series Game 1 was crazy, with the Arizona Diamondbacks losing their lead and then the game to the Texas Rangers. Corey Seager hit the tying two-run homer in the ninth inning in an exciting series opener. Rangers manager Bruce Bochy.
That was a great game. Entertaining game. Great ball game. We had some chances out there. Couldn't quite get that big hit, but late we did.
The Rangers won 6-5 in 11 innings, and Game 2 is tonight in Texas. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Family farm advocates in rural western Wisconsin are pushing back on concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, as the livestock industry becomes more concentrated. But local officials are also digging in. Here's Mark Moran.
Hundreds of residents of Pierce County, nestled along the Wisconsin-Minnesota border, are concerned about a proposed expansion of CAFOs in the county. Danny Akinson, with a group called Grassroots Organizing Western Wisconsin, or GRO, asked county officials to put a moratorium on CAFO expansion.
That moratorium did not pass. In its place, the county decided to create a groundwater advisory committee, which will be studying the effects that CAFOs can have on our groundwater.
Similar efforts at halting CAFO expansion have failed in other Midwest and Plains states, where advisory groups have also been formed and where CAFOs have the potential to pollute groundwater. Large corporate-owned farms say their operations are more efficient than small family farms and are simply meeting a growing demand. Akinson says advocates are trying to work with local officials to at least slow CAFO expansion. Known for dairy farms and cheese curds, residents of Pierce County towns such as River Falls, Spring Valley, and Ellsworth want to preserve the rural, pristine way of life the area is known for.
A lot of people come here looking for that rural way of life that you would not get in a place like the Twin Cities, for example.
CAFOs have been cited for a host of environmental problems as they expand across the country. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Mark Moran. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and here is today's episode. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Cripescast. I am joined by Colleen Maraca, the EP of the Cripescast here in the Cripescast studio.
Hello.
Today on the Cripescast, my guests are Alex Beld and Francisco Sayu. Alex is the communications director for Renew Wisconsin, and Francisco is the emerging technology director. And Renew Wisconsin, it's a nonprofit org, very cool organization dedicated to building a stronger, healthier, and more vibrant Wisconsin through the advancement of renewable energy. Mm-hmm. We are talking about everything from solar panels to buses, bioenergy, geothermal, hydropower, wind energy. It's just kind of a cool way to sort of see what Wisconsin is doing to, you know, push as much bipartisan legislation. And I think the thing with renewables, it is very bipartisan. There's a lot of money in renewables. It's a good thing to do for the environment. It's kind of a win-win for everyone, but it's just sort of figuring out what are the best ways to do it and what are the most effective ways. And that's kind of where this conversation is going. Mm-hmm. And Wisconsin is also kind of like a microcosm, you know, for the rest of the nation. So if you're not from Wisconsin, you know, this conversation will still show you what is possible here, what could be more possible in your state. Maybe you're in a state that has more sun, you know, maybe you're in a state that does not have sun. Some of these things will apply, some of them won't, but it gives you sort of like a structure to say, how is my state doing what Wisconsin is currently trying to do?
Right. And specifically like Midwest states too, they talk about how like other states bordering us are already doing. The main thing they came to talk about is like a electric school bus and like how states, I think it's Michigan and Iowa, are already doing that. So it's like, mm-hmm. if you're in the Midwest, it'll hit home for you. If not, like Charlie said, there's some things that will, some things that won't.
Yeah. So, yeah. We'll get to that conversation in a second. Before we do, Colleen, what do we have cooking here in Cripes Inc.? We got anything going on?
We do. We are announcing more and more tour dates, which is exciting. So coming up in December, we got your New York City show December 10th. So go check out Charlie and the Big Apple. And then we also just announced some shows in January in North Dakota. He's doing Fargo, Grand Forks, and Bismarck.
Miles is coming to the Fargo one, by the way.
Oh, nice. Is he going to do some time?
He'll probably get up on stage, you know. He'll probably say something, rally the crowd, that and the other thing.
I love that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and there's tons more. We just announced Madison date. There's a lot coming up in the spring. So if you haven't seen Charlie yet this year, don't worry. Go to cripescast.com/tour and you'll be able to see where you can see Charlie live. And then also too, it's your last week. This is your final reminder for October. So if you get a purchase of $100 or more of Midwest merch at ManitowocMinute.com and you add the orange oat beanie to your cart and use code OCTOBER at checkout, you get that orange beanie free.
Heck yeah.
So
shall we get to it?
Yeah.
My conversation with Renew Wisconsin. Here it is, ladies and gents. Thank you guys for coming on. Are you both in Madison?
Yeah, we are.
Nice, nice. So why don't we just start, you know, with the straight up elevator pitch, you know? Let's just get it out there for folks who don't know anything about renewable energy. They don't know anything about transportation or, you know, energy systems. What's wrong with the system, and what do you guys propose?
We are here representing Renew Wisconsin, and Renew Wisconsin is a nonprofit organization that has been around since 1991 supporting the clean energy transition in the state of Wisconsin. And by clean energy, we mean we live in a system that uses energy to run everything, right? It takes, you know, it takes energy to run life. You need energy to power your house. You need energy to power things at work. You need energy to move you around from place to place. A lot of the work Renew has done over the years in the state has focused on the transition to clean electricity, supporting, you know, people's access to solar energy, for example. You know, we live in a world where we like to support local initiatives, and it is no different in the energy sector, where if you generate your energy locally, you're not sending money out of your house or out of the state or out of the country. And that's part of the reason we're doing this, right? We want to support initiatives and programs and laws that will allow us to create as much of our electricity, as much of our energy here in the state, so we don't have to send money out of the state. So just to put some numbers around that, I have a background in engineering, so I think in numbers. So the state of Wisconsin does not produce any petroleum products. So every time we burn a gallon of gasoline or diesel fuel or jet fuel, we're sending money out of the state to purchase that fuel somewhere else. That number in Wisconsin right now is somewhere around $12 to $14 billion every year that we send out of the state economy to purchase those fossil fuels. Our goal is to support programs and to support initiatives that would allow us to power our economy with fuel that we can generate here in the state, to keep those dollars in the state to support jobs and to support the economic well-being of the state.
Yeah, so, I mean, that makes a lot of sense right there. Why, like, send money out of the state for a product that we all use? I mean, it's Wisconsin, though, has a history of that, a very recent history. I mean, they're sending people to Illinois for weed, Michigan for weed. You know, every state that touches Wisconsin has some weed. But Wisconsin's like, no, we don't want that money, man. We don't want that tax revenue. It's against, yeah. I don't know why we don't do it, but we have a pattern of that a little bit. So yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's great. I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, this is the way we have done things here, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we always done things this way. And there is value for wanting to do things the way you know and wanting to stay close to the things that you understand. But the world doesn't work like that all the time, and we need to evolve. And in the energy space, we have the technology that has evolved, and we need to catch up with it. So we need to create a framework here in the state. We need to create laws. We need to create programs that will allow citizens in the state to take advantage of technology that has matured enough to provide savings and to improve the quality of life of people here in the state. So we're here to talk about electric school buses. That's a perfect example of a technology that has mature enough that will allow us to fulfill the mission of that thing, which is taking kids to school safely, reliably. We can do that, and we can do that in a vehicle that doesn't poison the kids and that doesn't erode our, you know, doesn't send our money out of the state. Well, we can power that bus with energy that's generated here.
Okay. So we can power that bus with, but what about I was just listening to something about like the batteries, how big those batteries are on buses. Is it, with mining those, with getting the lithium to mine those and everything like that, is that that's, you know, one of the problematic areas in the, in not just the, from an environmental standpoint with strip mining and everything. Now, let me also say, before I start talking more about this for those listeners out there who may be skeptical of electric vehicles, you know, drilling for oil is also very damaging to the environment. So any way we get any resources, it's damaging. So it's not like, oh, you're mining for lithium, that means electric vehicles are bad. I think overall, it's certainly a huge step in the right direction. But with that, I think, you know, we just want to sort of at least address that. We do have to bring those in from out of state, right? We're not mining lithium or anything in the state of Wisconsin. Is that correct to say?
That is correct. And Alex, go ahead.
Yeah. So, like you said, Charlie, most of the resources that we collect for energy production are to fuel vehicles. Mining's involved or drilling's involved. Same with coal. You know, there's mountaintop coal mining, which you just literally blow up the top of a mountain to extract that coal. Mining for lithium and other metals like zinc and things like that, it's not always great for the environment. But unlike coal, there is the possibility of recycling those batteries. So as that technology gets better, we have a pathway out of doing as much mining. Mm-hmm. But I did want to go back to one of the points of something we generally advocate for, which ties in well with electric buses, is part of the reason why we advocate so heavily for renewables is just generally improving the quality of life from a health standpoint, right? Yeah. There's just going to be less smog in the air, less fumes in the air, things like that. So that's a very large part of what we're trying to accomplish.
I mean it definitely seems like a step in the right direction. And Francisco, I apologize, I think I cut you off there when you were talking about how it is sort of in Wisconsin. So like the battery aside, you know, which we don't produce here, but we're trying to produce more of that in the United States as opposed to sending those getting those resources from China, for instance. So how is it a closed gap system? How do we have that energy? How are we getting that electric energy in Wisconsin? I think that's where you were going next with that.
Yeah, but I do appreciate your concern for the sustainability aspect of the transition. I think that it's something that we don't want to overlook, the fact that there are some concerns with our supply chain and there are some concerns with batteries. Now, I love the fact that you brought the other side into focus too. It's not like, you know, oil extraction is not a benign process. And we've seen a lot of environmental issues from that. So it's like we're dealing with a situation that we're dealing with an imperfect system. And the thing that I like about the transition, the clean energy transition, is the fact that we're still doing a lot of the research, we're still learning a lot, and we're committed to doing things the right way. That doesn't mean that we're doing everything perfect today, but we definitely want to do things better. So in terms of, you know, battery chemistry, you know, batteries are a relatively nascent market because they haven't been a huge, huge demand for the kind of batteries that we need today. And I can almost guarantee you that 10 years from now, the battery supply is going to be much, much better than it is today, because that market is evolving in that way. And we're being mindful of doing things in a way that is responsible. So I don't want us to get too caught up on the, okay, you know, what's going on with batteries today, because, you know, we're going to see things like battery recycling, which is a business that's going to boom because there is a huge economic opportunity there. And businesses are going to take advantage of that opportunity. Nobody's going to throw those raw materials away because there is still a lot of value in those materials. So we're going to see those materials coming back again to the supply chain. So I wanted to kind of wrap up the issue of batteries because it's a huge concern in the industry and one that I don't want to ignore. I know people have questions and we will get questions for this, you know, about this for a long time. And we're happy to try to answer those questions to the best of our knowledge. But the truth is, this is a very new industry. We're still learning a lot. We're going to make mistakes and we're going to get better. So, you know, we just need to keep an open mind about that. Now, back to the point of the, you know, the big picture of the energy transition. It's like, yeah, basically, we have created a system in which we depend on fossil fuels that have very low efficiency. So we burn a lot of stuff. And so one of the national labs, the Berkeley Livermore National Lab in California, they create these chart every year that shows energy flows in the economy. And like, I love that thing. Like, I have it as a screensaver on my computer because it shows you. It shows
that's
you
your
how,
screensaver?
How it is. I love that thing. I just look at, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm crazy. I know, but. You know, but the thing is, it shows you how energy flows in the economy, right? So we get X amount of, you know, energy from coal, and we get X amount from natural gas and nuclear and wind and solar. And then it shows you how that energy is used. Like, you know, our coal goes into power, electricity generation, natural gas, some of it goes into electricity generation and some of it goes into the industrial sector. And then what you get out of all that energy input is in a small fraction of value. So we put like a whole unit of energy and we get about 30% of that in the form of value. Because at the end of the day, when you put gasoline in your vehicle, what you want is getting from point A to point B. What gives you value to you is how far that gasoline takes you, right? And if you put a value on what you actually get out of that gallon of gasoline, you're only getting about 20% of that. That 80%, it becomes waste that goes out of your, you know, tailpipe. And you don't get anything out of that. We have a system that depends on that. And the solution to it is moving to renewables, which is what we're trying to do here in Wisconsin. Because you put solar panels and all that waste disappear. Because we're not talking about a system that has an efficiency that's dependent on your input, because the sun is shining when it's shining. Like, you have no control over it and you don't have to pay more when it shines or it doesn't shine. You just get what you get and you use it, but there is not like a loss there. Right. Which is the case of, you know, fossil fuels. So big picture, we're trying to move the state towards that, where we have a system that runs on fuels and, you know, electricity that we can generate here. We don't have to send that money out of the state. And we would like to see that on the building sector. We like to see that in the transportation sector and in the industrial sector as well once we get there.
Okay. So essentially, the goal of, you know, your goal is to keep energy money in the state. So how do you do that? I mean, is that through wind, solar, geothermal? Like, what are the ways that we are producing renewable energy in this state? And also, what are the environmental costs of that energy?
For the most part, we're just running the gamut on all of them. We even have near our office over in Fitchburg, there's a school that's running off of quite a few of these. But for the most part, they're utilizing solar power and geothermal. Okay. But they're, I believe, is it the first in the state or the country that's net zero, Francisco?
In the state.
In the state. So we have a net zero school already. Operating in Fitchburg, and throughout the state, we're using, you know, solar, hydroelectric, wind, geothermal, biogas, which that has some issues with, you know, obviously producing some carbon when you burn it. But we're really using pretty much everything. But there are some issues with solar panels. It's the production, recycling, things like that. But there's also benefits. Farmers are able to rest their soil during the period of use that the solar panels are over that land. So when that project is complete in 30 or 50 years and the panels move or new panels get put up somewhere else, that soil is going to be more fertile.
Geothermal, could you explain exactly what that is for those who don't know and where it's
pick
happening?
Me, pick me.
Yeah. Go for it, Francisco. Yeah.
You said geothermal, and I got excited because so I have a background in engineering, and most of my professional career has been working in energy efficiency for buildings and new construction. And geothermal is a fantastic technology. And I truly believe that if you're building a new building in Wisconsin, geothermal is probably the most effective, the most efficient system that you can go for, you can install. And you know, we have a lot of schools in Wisconsin, new schools in Wisconsin that have geothermal systems. And I worked on some of these projects and I absolutely love these projects. Sun Prairie has two elementary schools that are geothermal buildings. Verona has a new high school that are geothermal buildings. We're starting to see hospitals, we're seeing hotels that are geothermal buildings. So geothermal in Wisconsin, before that, we probably have the largest geothermal installation in the country here in Wisconsin over at the Epic campus. A lot of those buildings have geothermal heat pumps for their heating and cooling. So what I'm trying to say in a very long way is geothermal systems are pretty amazing. And if building owners and design teams are actually thinking about what's the best option we can take, we have to take to make a building, you know, more efficient and sustainable, it is geothermal. The way it works, so there's two types of geothermal energy. There is geothermal with a big G and geothermal with a little g. Geothermal with a big G is when you have enough heat on the ground that you can pump that water, usually water, you know, that's very hot, and use it to run a turbine and generate electricity. And we have actually countries that rely on that heavily. We have some of that in the Southwest in the US, but the geothermal energy resource in the US is somewhat limited to some geographic areas because, you know, you need enough heat that you can actually run a turbine with that.
And just for our audience, and honestly myself, there are some places in Wisconsin where the water underneath the bedrock is hot?
Nope. That is geothermal with a big G, and that usually happens. That's usually available in the Southwest of the US.
Got it. Here, okay.
In Wisconsin, we don't have that.
Got it.
We don't have geothermal with a big G. We only have geothermal with a little g. And what that means is basically the temperature underground is pretty much constant year round.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But if you have a building, you have a home or a factory or a hospital, you have to cool it in the summer and you have to heat it in the winter. And you're fighting against the temperature outside of that building to try to stay within your comfortable range. So let's say you want to keep your house at 70 degrees year round, but you also want to bring some outdoor air and you have to compensate for that heat loss that's going through your windows or your walls. So you have to take air from somewhere, whether it's your side, the side of, you know, inside of the house or outside. And then you want to condition it, bring it back to whatever you want it, 65, 70 degrees, and then make your house comfortable. In the winter, you're going from, if you're taking air from the outside, you're going from, let's say, 0 degrees outside. You're heating that air to 70 degrees and delivering it to your bedroom so you can be nice and comfortable. In the summer, let's say it's 90 degrees outside, you're taking 90 degree air from outside and you're cooling it down to, let's say, 70 and you're delivering to your room. So you have that delta, right? That temperature difference between the air that you're picking up, because you have to bring some outdoor air anyway, just so you're not breathing the same air all the time. You're picking up. Also, your house loses air, like buildings lose air. So, you know, you have to bring some air. You have to fight that difference. If you're using the temperature of the water underground, that difference becomes a lot smaller because now you're going from 65 degrees or 60 degrees underground or 55 degrees underground to 65 or to 70. That's what you want inside your house. So what geothermal systems, what the geothermals with a little g do is they take the heat that is already in the medium and they use that to provide the heat that you want for the space that you're conditioning. So one way to think about it is geothermal systems are basically heat pump systems. And a heat pump is a thing, it's a piece of equipment that takes heat from one space and pump it into another space.
Sure.
So it's just like a water pump, but this one is a heat pump. And we all have one in our house. It's called the refrigerator. So if you own a refrigerator that's like 10 years old or newer, it's a heat pump. And basically what it does is when you put something in the fridge and it's kind of hot, the fridge takes that heat out of that, you know, your hot soup, takes it and pump it outside of the refrigerator. That's why if you walk behind the refrigerator, you kind of feel that heat because it's taking whatever is inside of it, it's hot, it's pumping that heat out. A heat pump for your house does the same thing. The difference with a geothermal heat pump is that it is taking heat from the ground and it's pumping it into your house. So it's using 55 degree water to get heat to bring it into your house rather than using 20 degree air to take up heat and put it inside your house.
I see.
It's complicated. It's a complicated concept, but basically it's like, you know, you have to think about you have your heat source and your heat sink. You're going to pick up heat from one place and you're going to dump it somewhere else, right? Geothermal heat pumps have a better source because they are always sourcing from the same spot at the same temperature. Your air source heat pump is having to adapt, having to adjust to whatever the temperature is outside to find that heat. So that's what gives it that huge advantage. Got so again, it. You know, best system you can install in a new building. We're seeing it coming up a lot, and there is a reason for that. So, but like Alex said, we support everything. We support solar, we support wind, we support geothermal, we support biofuels, we support electric vehicles, because that aligns with our overall strategy, which is we need to electrify things. We need to run as much as we can on electricity so we can eventually run it on renewable electricity. Because if you got, you know, I have a gas furnace at home that I hope I can, you know, transition to a heat pumps one day, but I won't be able to run my gas furnace on a local or locally generated fuel probably ever, because I don't know when we're going to be able to generate, you know, natural gas. I mean, we do have renewable gas from the landfill, but, you know, I'm not connected to that. So I'm always going to be relying on imported fuel to run my furnace at home. If I had a heat pump that run on electricity and I put solar on my roof, I can run my furnace or my heat pump with fuel that I'm generating here. And that's kind of the whole, that's the goal. That's what we're going for.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. People in Maine are beginning a healing process after the man who killed 18 people in a mass shooting this week is found dead. Maine Public Safety Commissioner Michael Soschuk told reporters this morning.
I think clearly there's a mental health component to this.
Israel's Defense Forces spokesman says through an interpreter that the nation has stepped up its air and ground attacks on the Gaza Strip.
We are acting with the various objectives that we outlined for ourselves, with a national effort as well to return our hostages.
Democratic Representative Dean Phillips says he's running against President Biden in 2024. CBS's Robert Costa reports.
Phillips is the first sitting lawmaker to take on Biden, joining Marianne Williamson running against the president in the Democratic race. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Cornel West, who have followings on the left, are running as independents.
CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
U.S. Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting. Today. A teenager by FEMA learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't welcome have to speak to Carroll to be University a football
thousands
on the
of
Shaw.
Teens in foster W-A-U-K, care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
In a row.
And today, the old Musket Trophy is at stake as Carroll visits one of its longtime rivals, the Firebirds of Carthage. The Pioneers earned the Musket the last 2 years and could make it 3 in a row with a win in Kenosha. Carroll University football is brought to you locally by Mia's in downtown Waukesha.
And by The Shaw, WAUK, and Civic Media. Now, let's join Don Brown and Johnny Watermullen on the field for all the action.
Let's go Pios!
Good afternoon and welcome to Art Keller Field.
at beautiful Carthage University in Kenosha, Wisconsin, for one of the oldest rivalries in Wisconsin college football, the old musket game. I'm Don Brown, joined by Johnny Watermelon, or Mullen, but not Mullen. But
we can go Melon, Mullen.
We can go Mullen. Yeah, Chris Mullen, yeah. So, but hey, we're really excited to be here. Really excited to have Johnny back. He's got the clearance. He's 100%. And he might even get in on a few plays if Coach Buddha, you know, if they build up a big enough lead here against Carthage. And we also want to welcome those listeners from the Cripes Cast. And Johnny, we got to work on getting Charlie Barron on as a third chair.
You know, it'd be so much fun to have Charlie.
The Milliken game's the last game of the season, so maybe we can extend an invitation, get some of the C-suite executives at Civic Media to make that happen.
Sure.
Charlie would have a lot of fun at Schneider Stadium, and they would certainly pack the Schneider if they knew he was going to be there. But, you know, Johnny and I have been reviewing all the numbers, and everything looks like it should go Carroll's way today. You hate to cast aspersions or jinx or make projections, but Johnny, tell us your feelings about the game today.
Well, you had to say it, didn't you, Don? Now, they're playing for the old musket here, and I think it's going to be, you know, on paper, it looks fairly lopsided. I mean, Carroll's coming into this thing 4-3, and Carthage, the Firebirds, are 1-6. And all the numbers and the stats that we looked at and kind of picked apart here sure shows that the Pioneers have got these guys, you know, beat on paper. And just the performance today, I'm expecting a high-scoring game, quite frankly, by the Pios. And I think the Firebirds are going to take another one on the chin, Don.
The Birds of Fire have let an average of 41 points go across the line or through the uprights per game. And they're only putting up less than 14 points a game. So everything points to Carroll's. When you look at Carroll's stats, it's 55 points game or 39 points per game if you're looking at the conference. So they and this is a game where, you know, this is a very explosive offense that was put on hold against a very powerful Wheaton team the week before and then, a few weeks back. But when they're on, as we see, they are hot and they've got a lot of different weapons. And one new wrinkle in the starting lineup today, Johnny. Tell us about that.
Well, I think we have a new running back today, Don. His number's number 24. I think we got introduced to him by Buddha.
Coach Buddha told us, yeah.
We were walking up here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about our number 24?
He's a freshman, a diaper dandy, as Dick Vitale would call him, out of Hillcrest, Illinois, Hillcrest High School, named Marcus Johnson. And we saw him in kind of a cleanup role. I believe he came in against Wisconsin Lutheran earlier in the season and maybe in one of the other big game, big victories, whether that was Wesleyan or Elmhurst or both. But this time he's getting the nod. And so, and I think with the normal starter, Nick Legnioli, Legs, with his hamstring bothering him, he may take a seat today or get some rest. And then they will be alternating, as we understand, Mikey Coleman and Jackson Case, you know, part of the normal rotation. And, you know, this would be another good game to give our receivers some other touches. You know, it's been pretty much Austin Eichstadt, 6 touchdowns for the season, over 100 yards per game on a lot of NFL watch list. But Josh Hill has proven that he can put the ball in the end zone with the 3 touchdowns on the homecoming win against Elmhurst. And, you know, Sammy Muth, you know, filling in for his injured brother, J.R. We'd, you know, like to see him get some more touches. Our tight ends, they've accounted for 5 touchdowns this season. So, you know, we'd like to see Trevor Hancock and Reed Breckheimer, you know, get some more touches. And, you know, I think it's just a great opportunity. Maybe we'll work some of the nickel and dime type of thing to run the ball, grind out the clock, hit these receivers underneath coverage. You know, things that they weren't able to accomplish against very formidable defenses that are ranked in the top 15. Of course, you know, number 1 North Central and then number 13 Wheaton last week. So yeah, a lot to unpack here today. And we've been blessed with the weather. The sun came out this morning. It's still decent sunshine, a little crisp, maybe one of the colder days of the season so far. But a lot of people tell you that's perfect football weather if you're on the field, right, Johnny?
Feels great, man. It's a nice crisp fall day. Everybody's got a little energy going on here. It's going to be a beautiful day for football.
It sure
and I know
is.
The players like this when it's a little bit cooler. Mm-hmm. And we got a great facility here. I think Carthage has got a nice setup, so we're in a good spot.
This is our first visit for Johnny and I at Carthage. We've been to Kenosha before, and it really is quite an oasis. It's a beautiful campus, a lot of trees. And, of course, this time of year, brings out that magic of campus life with the changing colors and a lot of modern facilities here. The home bleachers is connected to the student center, so Johnny got the Philly cheesesteak downstairs. I had a smash burger, and they're lovely. There's a really nice size visiting section over there. In fact, it's so big that the Carthage's marching band is set up over there. And now we know Carthage is 1-6 for the year, 1-5 conference. Their coach is Dustin Haas, a Hoosier, class of 2008, in his sixth season with a total record of 17-32. But in Carthage hasn't had a winning season in quite a few years, maybe more than 20 years. Kind of like what Carroll had been going through before Coach Buddha and his team arrived. But Carthage was the toast of Division III college football, Division II college football back in the day. The man whose stadium bears his name, Art Keller, was one of the winningest coaches in all of college football with a total record of 177 wins versus 87 losses and 7 ties. 8 conference titles, 2 Division II national semifinalists. And then from 1961 to 63, his team had a 19-game winning streak, which was the longest streak in the country at the time. So there's a tradition here. They lead the series against Carroll. It started in 1961, 29-16. They've owned the Old Musket for most of those years. In fact, Carthage hasn't seen the Old Musket at its campus. Excuse me, Carroll hasn't. From 1997 to 2019, when we finally took it back in 2021. The last 2 years, it's been in Coach Buddha's office, and Coach Buddha liked to keep it that way. I know he was obliged to bring it here today, and I think, but it's only with the hope of raising it in the air after what we believe, what we hope will be a Pioneer win today.
Well, sure, shaping up to be that way. I mean, anything can happen, like they say, on any given Sunday. But I'll tell you, man, after this three-game losing streak, we'll call it, you know, that's a black eye, a fat lip, and a bloody nose. And I think our Pios are just about have had it with that kind of experience. So they're going to come out.
It's actually 3 of the last 4, but you're right.
Yeah. 3 of the last 4. So they're going to come out a little bit revved up here.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you another thing, Johnny, is that, again, Carthage has kind of a longer way back than we do after back-to-back winning seasons. And, again, they've had a really long losing streak. But there's all the makings for a program on the rise here when you look at the beautiful facilities you have. You look at the proximity to two of the greatest cities, not only in the region but maybe in the whole country, with Chicago and Milwaukee. You've got the lake here, a hop, skip, and a jump. Well, actually, the campus, I think, here is close to the lake. But there's so many positives for why this would be an attractive place for a young talent here in the region as well as from different parts of the country. And we've seen this when we look at these other CCIW rosters, that these colleges are recruiting kids from the deep south, from the coast. That Caleb Tetherington from Wheaton, who ate us up last week, came from North Carolina. And so there's, you know, there's some great colleges here in the CCIW and great Division III athletics that are appealing to a lot of great talent from around the country. And I think Carthage can certainly make that case. I know today, again, it's a different story with where they're at. But I'm sure Coach Buddha has these guys on high alert, given that this is a big rivalry. I understand from Sean and Peter, who are our counterparts for Carthage calling the game in the radio, that Peter is saying Coach Buddha told him this morning that during the week, none of the Pioneer players were allowed to wear any red, any Carthage red. They were not allowed to use any words that began with the letter C. Like, try putting that in your vocabulary, Johnny. So Coach Buddha's created a psychology for these players to understand this is a very important game. It may not be the North Central or the Wheatons or the Augustanas, but it's still a conference rival. It's the only other CCIW school in Wisconsin. And so he's got these guys on high alert.
Buddha's got a sense of humor is what
he sure does. Yeah, I love it.
He didn't happen to mention that when we were walking up to the stadium here when we met him out in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. All he said is, hey, got a new guy, number 24, yep, coming in.
Yeah.
So he didn't mention anything about that stuff.
But what we love about Coach Buddha is he went over to the parent tailgate to have an audience with Eric Rupnow, the father of our center, Justin Rupnow, who splits centering duties with Max Katsenos. And so, Eric has some sagely wisdom. I wonder what he had to share with Coach Buddha or what great conversation. But, when we saw Mike Shulis at the first game, he was talking to Eric Rupnow. So Eric commands a lot of respect among the Pio parents. And there's quite a few Pio parents that really support this team hard. We see them filling up the Carroll side across the field. and the bleachers there. There's a beautiful track here that surrounds this field, too, so it is a great facility. And it looks like from the lines that just like with Carroll, they use it for men's and women's soccer and lacrosse. So it is a great multi-use facility. Beautiful field. Turf looks like it's in great shape. Looks real plush compared to other artificial turfs we've seen. So, and this facility we're in, the press box is great. We're allowed to open the window here, so we got a mic feeding out into the field. And so I know our new sales director, Chris Morrow, likes that, getting that sound from the game. So hopefully that'll be working well for us. And, seats are filling in on the Carthage side. You might be able to hear on the radio the marching band from the other side of the field. And then they've got a cheerleading squad that's like 30, 40 plus. So a lot of student spirit here at Carthage. And just a lot of excitement for what should be, you know, perfect conditions for a great game. So we're going to take a moment now to pay a few bills. Anya, if you could take us to a 30-second break, we'll be right back here on the Pioneer Football Radio Network on WAUK Radio.
Folks, I tell you this much, the Cripes Cast is just the butter on my cheese.
Cockroaches, not that bad. They call them palmetto bugs in South Carolina. Same thing, you can call them up here.
Really, and palmetto bugs. Yes.
Yeah, and they're a great source of protein. They're Did going you know to be that? The lobsters of the future.
They also got salmonella, and they can lay like 40 eggs at once.
Well, they gotta work out a few kinks there, okay? They gotta work out a few kinks.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Welcome back, everyone, to Civic Media's live coverage of Carroll University Pioneer Football. We are in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I'm Johnny Watermelon with my friend Don Brown. And we're at Carthage College facing off with the Firebirds today. And as we spoke earlier in the broadcast, it looks like on paper that the Pioneers got a pretty big advantage. But, you know, on any given Sunday, dude,
exactly.
Stuff can
or
happen.
Saturday.
Or Saturday. I keep thinking, maybe I'm still a little sick from last week.
That could be it. But, hey, now would be a good time. I'll read off the starting lineup, starting with our Pio offense at quarterback. You have the fifth-year senior from Algonquin, number 9, Josh Raby. At running back, his first start, the diaper dandy, the freshman.
Yeah, you like that guy.
Marcus Johnson, number 24. The wide receivers are senior Keon Miller and Josh Hill, an all-senior lineup, and, of course, Austin Eichstadt. Our tight end will be Reed Breckheimer, the sophomore from Hilbert. At left tackle, we've got Nate Johnson, the sophomore from Menasha. Left guard, Joey Cole, the junior from Antano, Illinois. The center, Max Katsanos, number 78, from Cary. Right guard, number 73, Trevor Pye, the junior from Waterford. Right tackle, number 61, Kevin Whitman, the junior from Chicago. And again, as I mentioned, the tight ends, tight end Reed Breckheimer wears number 45. Trevor Hancock, number 40, will also, you'll see both of those guys out there in many of the plays. Austin Eichstadt wears 84. Josh Hill wears 89. Keon Miller wears number 2, so I got all the numbers covered there. On defense for your Pios, defensive end number 50 is the senior from Carpentersville, Illinois, Elios Martinez. The defensive tackle number 97, Nick Montes, the senior from Northbrook, Illinois, and Glenbrook North High School. The other defensive tackle number 93, Tim Nelson, the junior from Racine Lutheran, just up the road from here. Actually, it's Steven Lazarus and Luke Brosig are both listed as starters. I know Brosig started, the sophomore from DePere, started in front of Lazarus, the Norma starter, the junior from Colgate. But 54, Lazarus gets the nod today, and Brosig will be switching duties with him a lot. The linebacker who leads the team in tackles, Will Campbell, number 42, the sophomore from Kakana, Johnny's neck of the woods. The other inside linebacker, Damon Loker, the 5'10 junior from Kimberly, fabled high school football program there. Outside linebacker, Travis Runberg, number 43 from Cumberland, and he'll be splitting duties right down the middle with number 27, Jagger Vine, the junior from New Franklin, Green Bay Preble High School. Cornerback, the Pirate, Elliot Miller, the junior from Pewaukee, number 16. Again, Vine's 27, Runberg's 43, Loker's 46, Campbell's 42. Strong safety is Jim Clem, number 12, the junior from Lindenhurst, Illinois. Jake Binkowski back in the lineup. He came back last week. They'll be splitting duties, too. Binkowski, the junior from Pulaski. And then free safety is the Drake. Drake Emmanuel, the sophomore from Rockton, Illinois. And then at the other corner, number three, Ja'Kai Bohannon, the freshman from Milwaukee's Tosa West. So that is all of your pioneers. Johnny, you want to give a shot at the Firebirds lineup, or do you want me to do it?
You can. I'm still a little cloudy here.
Sounds good. All right. So we've got a couple of Bryces in the backfields for the Carthage offense. The starting quarterback, number three, Bryce Lowe, the junior from Tampa, Florida. Starting tailback, Bryce Frank, number 25, the sophomore from Marshall, Wisconsin. Tight end, Peter Orlandino, the junior from Naperville. Wide receiver, and Orlandino is number 89. Wide receiver, number 28, Jordan Wiles, the senior from Rolling Meadows, Illinois. Wide receiver, number 11, Argent Ismaili, the 6'2 sophomore from Kenosha, Indian Trail High School, right here in town. Another wide receiver, number 13, Gibson Groves, the senior from Johnsonburg, Illinois. Right tackle, you got Lucas Cusmiers, the sophomore from Villa Park. He's number 72. Right guard, number 74, Mihailo Milutinovic, the junior from Northbrook, Lembrook North High School. Center is Matt Johnson. Mihailo is number 74. Matt Johnson is number 75, the 6'4 junior from Lockport, Illinois. The left guard is Cam Trung, the 6'3 senior from Tarpon Springs, Florida. And then left tackle of number 76. Trung is 67, by the way. Left tackle number 76, Ryan Lakin, the senior from Naperville, Illinois. So you can hear in the background they're announcing the sponsors for today's game, so which will give me time to tell you about the give you the lineup for the Carroll defense. Your defensive end is Oliver Cox, number 54, the senior from Oswego, Illinois. Defensive tackle Jordan Hughes, number 98, the sophomore from Chesterton, Indiana. The other defensive tackle, number 51, Nick Levy, the junior from Menominee Falls. Defensive end Chris Gutierrez, the junior from North Riverside, Illinois, Nazareth Academy. The linebacker Chris DeVito leads the team in tackles. Number 6, the senior from Arlington Heights, Illinois, Rolling Meadows High School. The other linebacker, number 29, Garrett Warner, the senior from Richland, Michigan. The nose tackle, it's a letter N. I'm guessing it's like a rover back. It's letter N, which is weird. Jared Ruth, number 20, a senior from Urbana, Illinois. Defensive back, Cohen Abreu, the sophomore from Mililan, Hawaii, Eleanor Roosevelt High School. The other defensive back, Tanner Ludwig, the junior from Littleton, Colorado, closer to home. Another defensive back is Adaris Walton, the sophomore from Parkridge, Illinois, Maine East High School. And then the other defensive back is number 1, Jalik Barnes, the sophomore from Ocala, Florida. So a lot of different parts of the country represented here. We see the Carthage team getting ready to run out. They're carrying the American flag. I'm assuming that's in honor of our veterans here as we approach Veterans Day in the coming weeks. And the Firebirds are decked out in all red with white fonts. Carthage written across the letters and the numbers in the front, on top of the numbers. And as I mentioned, red helmets with the fire logo icon of the university. We see the Pioneers now walking out, the visiting team. They are decked out in orange pants, white jersey with orange fonts, blue trim, orange helmets with Pio Pete on it. And one note, too, about the Carthage uniform is they got diagonal stripes, black and white stripes, kind of below the shoulders on the side. It's a unique look compared to other teams. Pios have the shoulder stripes that they're known for having. Mostly that navy with some orange trim. So both teams looking sharp from a uniform standpoint. It's neat in the corners of each of these end zones, Johnny. They have the time clock, the play clock, if you will. The 25-second clock.
Yeah, that's a little
clock.
Different,
yeah,
so isn't it, Don?
That's unique. Yeah, usually you'll see that in the scoreboard. And scoreboard, I believe, is all the way at the end. It's a jumbotron that, for us, we got a stretch to get to. So here come the Firebirds, led by some cheerleaders holding flaming flags. They announce the coach, Justin Haas. Haas again in his sixth season with the team, a 17-32 record, his first head coaching duty. And, of course, his counterpart in his third season with the team, Mike Budashevsky, for the 4-3 Pios. And in his fourth season, he's compiled a 16-4 record, which includes the first two back-to-back winning seasons in Carroll history, probably since the early 90s. So we're going to take a minute here. They're about to do the national anthem. So let's take a moment here for station identification and then a one-minute commercial break here on the Pioneer Football Radio Network. If you could take it away, Anya. Thank you.
You've heard the word a lot lately, but what does it mean to be arraigned? The Department of Justice describes it as the first court appearance for someone facing criminal charges. A judge reads those charges, then the accused enters a plea. At the end of an arraignment, a trial date is set along with bond. And depending on the severity of the charges, the judge can add conditions to take away the defendant's weapons or passport before being released. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
AM Radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. It also delivers vital emergency information when your community needs it most. A new bill in Congress would ensure AM Radio stays in your car, because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Welcome back, everyone, to Civic Media's live coverage of Carroll University Pioneers football. Don Brown is here doing the play-by-play, and I'm Johnny Watermelon, giving you a little color here today during the game. And we're just getting geared up for the kickoff here. The captains are coming out, and they're going to shake hands, and the Zebras are going to toss, and we're going to get rocking and rolling here, Don.
Sounds great. Representing Carthage is number 29, Garrett Warner, a defensive back, senior. Number 6, Chris DeVito, the linebacker. Number 28, Jordan Wiles, or senior wide receiver. And then number 3, Bryce Lowe, the junior quarterback out of Lutz, Florida. For our Pios, we've got Nick Montes, number 97. We've got Josh Hill, number 89, our receiver. Carthage wins the toss. Put your backs. Elios Martinez is the third captain, and then we're trying to get the fourth captain here. That is Damon Loker, number 16, representing the pile. So some different captains in the lineup here. So Carroll will start off with the ball. Carthage has elected to defer to the second half. Carroll will be defending what I believe to be the south end zone here, if I've got my geometry right. But it is the end zone on the same side as the scoreboard. Johnny, you're better at this. You're a hunter. You're an outdoorsman.
It's geography, not geometry. Maybe,
that's a but, hey,
well, okay.
Some geometric geography, yeah.
It's a geo something, right?
Yeah, it is something so, geo, yeah.
I would call it the south end, Don. You are correct, sir.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay, there you go.
So, yeah, I'm looking at the – so this time of day, it's hard to tell where the sun came from, you know, over there on top there. So, but kicking off for the Carthaginians, number 43, Eric – and Ankowitz, the sophomore from Palos Heights, Illinois, St. Lawrence High School. And Ankowitz, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly, also does the punting duties. So you're going to see him a lot. And, of course, back to receive for the Pios, number 2, Keon Miller, who's still working on a record in receiving yard, kickoff return yards.
Miller deep
so.
For Carroll.
Could be a couple records broken here today. So let's keep an eye on what's going on with this return. We only need 12 yards to break that record.
Is that right?
Yep.
Nice.
So it's very close. And some other stuff that's right on the hinge, you know, on the Renfrew's kicking
Johnny.
Game. He's got, he's going to work on his.
So and I get a closer look at the Carthage helmet, and there is a bird in that flaming logo icon of theirs.
All right, deep kick.
It's a deep kick, and Miller's just going to let it go for the touchback. Carthage heck-bent on preventing Carroll from breaking that record, maybe. So,
well, that was a deep kick, sir.
Yeah. So here comes Pioneer Aviation, Pioneer Aviation, to borrow from Margaret Hot Lips Houlihan.
Invest in Pioneer Aviation.
Put all our stock in Pioneer Aviation. But I don't know, with the freshman, I see some running plays in Josh Raby's attack today.
Well, you know, Buddha likes to run.
Ball's on the left hash, single receiver left, triple receivers right. Johnson on Raby's left here. Here's the snap. Quick pass to the left. Oh, that's Eichstead. He has the catcher. He has first down yardage. I thought he dropped it there, but he hung on to it. It was a little bit of a bobble.
Raby's pass is complete.
And it's first down yardage. They're already moving the chains to about the 35, first and 10.
Gain of 10 on the play. And a Carroll first down, first and 10. Pioneers at their own 35-yard line.
And then the tackle for – that was Jaleek Barnes on the tackle here. So, single